You're listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, recorded in Kingston, Ontario, Canada.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Sleep in Society. Today, I have with me Braden Elliott. I'm delighted to have Braden with me. Braden composed the introduction and the outroduction for Sleep in Society podcast. And welcome, Braden.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for joining me. I am delighted to have you. I wanted to, how are you doing?
I'm pretty good. Yeah, I can't complain. You know, even given the circumstances, there's always optimistic views you can have about things. So I'm trying to stay as optimistic as possible and just, you know, keep carrying on.
That's awesome. I'm doing pretty okay considering the circumstances. I'm trying to find the positive in every day. And it's also more a day by day thing right now. And so I'm trying to compose my day in a way that there is a positive element to it. And one of the positive elements is to be able to talk to wonderful humans like you and share these conversations within our community and beyond. Braden, you composed the music, which I so deeply love. And sometimes I think I just listen to the podcast just to hear your music. Can you tell me a little bit about your process?
You know, after our conversation we had at Northside, when we, you know, kind of talked about the concept that you wanted and the feel you were kind of going for, I kind of just went home. You know, I had, you know, I wrote down some notes about it, like what you were trying to go for the intro music, like the feelings you kind of wanted to provoke. And I kind of just went off of that. You know, I found some chords that I thought would work for, you know, like kind of a, you know, a thought-provoking sound for the introduction. So, like, you know, it kind of feels like something's about to happen is the way I kind of went with it.
Yeah.
Like it was basically just sitting down, kind of trying to get into that headspace of, you know, okay, what would I want to hear if I was trying to feel that? And then just I put that down and recorded it. That's pretty much it.
I think it was very interesting because I felt that. Like, there was not, like, when I first heard the introductory piece, it felt, it really pulled me in. Like, I think I listened to it over and over and over again because it really, every time I listened to it, it really pulled me in, the music itself. And then the outro was like, I felt that there was almost like, it's more often upbeat, like as if, like, you know, you're ending something and there's like, you've somehow it's like almost elevating. The introduction is very thought provoking. I found it incredibly interesting that it did. There was that sense of something is about to happen. And with the introduction, it was more like, okay, there's a sense of something that had finished, something that had ended. Thank you so much for doing that. I really appreciate it. And it's beautifully done. And you're a fantastic composer.
thank you so much. Yeah, I'm pretty new to composing kind of in this realm, you know, like doing you know, like podcast work, like commercial work as well. Like I'm trying to kind of break into that as well. But yeah, so like, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to, you know, test my skills and see, you know, see what I could get done with it.
Well, thank you for doing it. I really appreciate it. I wanted it very community based because, you know, it was really important to me that members of our community was, you know, everybody was involved in this process because I find it such a collaborative thing. And I really appreciate it. I'm so glad. And, you know, I wanted to say that meeting we had at Northside when we were talking about what I wanted, I also found out some very interesting things about how you grew up, which, by the way, was fascinating to me. And I really, and we talked about it then too, that I really wanted you to come and talk about this because it's such an interesting and an unusual way of being, you know, brought up or raised, or how you lived as a child and then as an adolescent. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So I lived in yurts when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. Like Mongolian yurts is where they kind of originated. But these were a bit more modern. It's pretty much what a yurt is. It's kind of like a glorified tent in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's made of, you know, vinyl around the outside. The inside it's all wooden, and it's like insulated on the inside as well. So it's not super cold or anything like that. Although sometimes, you know, like if you don't put the wood stoves on or anything like that, then there were a couple times at night it would get down to like minus 10 in the house if I forgot to do something. So it's like the insulation's not perfect because, you know, it is still just vinyl on the outside. But overall, it was very like homey feeling.
Can you describe these yurts to us a little bit?
Yeah, so they're like circular, so they're around, you know, 30 feet in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of meet at a point in the middle of each yurt. So there's like a skylight at the top, and there's no walls, or not walls, sorry, there's no ceilings or anything in the yurts. So like we had segregated walls for rooms.
You had a ceiling, but not like the rooms did not have their individual ceiling. There was like just like the ceiling on the yurt, but the rooms were more like just walls.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, if you were looking from the top, if mm-hmm. you were looking, like you would be able to see the inside of each room. It's almost like if you're picturing like a blueprint or something of a house where you can see like where the door is and where everything is in the room. That's literally how it was. So we had two of these yurts. One of them was the kid's side. So it was me and my three siblings. We lived on that side and we all had our rooms over there. And then there was a breezeway between the two, which was like a laundry room. And we kept all of our like coats and boots and everything in there. And then on the other side was everything else. So kitchen, living room, my parents' bedroom, and the bathroom.
So there are three of you without any ceiling. So privacy was somewhat, it wasn't as private as a room would be where you can close the door off and be able to, you know, do whatever. How did you guys get along? First of all, how old were you?
So, how old was I? Like, I'm really bad with my timeline. how old was I when we moved out there? I think I was, before this, our house had burnt down, and I was grade 3 when that happened. And then that's kind of how we decided to move into the yurts. But I think that was maybe 1 or 2 years later, so I may have been like grade 5, grade 6 maybe, I think,
okay,
when we actually moved out to the yurts.
Okay, so your house had burnt down.
Mm-hmm.
Your parents decided that that was it? They wanted a different way of living?
Yeah, so like we had built another house on that property,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think they were fully convinced that's what they wanted after it was built. And then, you know, my dad kind of was looking up different ways of doing things, and I think he stumbled upon yurts and then kind of took it from there.
Amazing. And then you and your siblings, sorry, let's go back to the fact, how did you guys get along in these spaces where you couldn't slam the door? And
yeah. I'm pretty sure actually like my brother's room literally didn't have a door. So like you could just walk in. I mean, they were pretty young at the time, and honestly, most of us just kind of spent all of our time outside anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't too much, you know, fighting involved between us. I mean, I'm into music, as we discussed earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be practicing music, but I would just be like, hey guys, I'm practicing music. you're gonna have to suck it up for a little while. You can either, you know, stay in here and do your thing in your rooms or whatever, or you can go outside. And that's pretty much it.
And they ended up going outside?
Yeah, they'd go outside, or they'd go over to my parents' side and hang out in the living room or something like that. Or they would just stay in their rooms, kind of keep doing their thing, like reading or whatever they were doing. So it's everybody got along very well in our household. It was like we're very, very close knit because of it.
Amazing. And interesting, because right now everybody being isolated and in their own spaces, I think this would be a great story to go by right now as to how to live together, especially if there's more than one or two siblings in the house, and how to share the space.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm back with my, like, I moved back to my parents here for a little bit,
mm-hmm.
Just like, you know, through the quarantine and such. And my other two brothers, they're here as well. So there are five of us in the house right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So far it's been, you know, it's been pretty, what's the word I'm looking for? Everyone's getting along really well. Like, there haven't been, you know, there's no kind of issues.
It's not amicable. It's all amicable.
Amicable. That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah. And then but you guys are not in a yurt anymore. You guys are actually in a house. How long did you live in a yurt?
I think it was around 7 or 8 years. 7 or 8 years.
So you went from pre-adolescent to adolescence in that, during that time.
Yes.
You were a preteen to a teen. And how were, so you guys were, was it fairly isolated?
Yes, it was very isolated. So we lived about 45 minutes north of Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
And we were down, you know, we were down like a side road, gravel road. I don't think it really got paved even, or not paved, sorry, snow plowed or anything in the wintertime, because it was like so far out. But yeah, so we lived down, you know, like I said, pretty far out, mm-hmm. just like in the middle of the woods type of thing. We did have some neighbors that were like, you know, 500 meters to a kilometer away type of thing,
mm-hmm.
Like on either side. But it was very isolated.
And how did you get to school? I'm hoping you went to, like, you guys did go to school, right? Like,
yeah.
Or were you homeschooled? No, I mean, it could be, that could also be a possibility.
Yeah. No, like, that probably would have been easier. But
mm-hmm.
So, like, through public school, we went to, there's a rural school out there. It was called Storrington Public School.
Mm-hmm.
So we went there. It wasn't very far. That was probably 20-minute bus ride.
Mm-hmm.
But then as soon as high school hit, I went to school in Kingston. So I went to LaSalle Secondary.
Okay.
And for the first little bit, I would take the bus, and that would be a long, long bus ride. In the mornings, it would be probably closer to an hour 15 minutes. But in the afternoon, it also picked up public school kids. So we would get to a certain point. So we would drive out all the way, probably 10 minutes from our house.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would have to turn around, go back, pick up the public school kids, and then go back to our house. So the bus ride was like an hour 45, 2 hours to get home.
And what did you do during the bus ride?
You just read or listen to music. That's pretty much it.
And what time did you have to get up in the morning to make it to the bus?
I was up most days around 6:30, I'd say, 6:30. Because the bus, for high school, the bus would show up at 6:50.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And then when did you guys go to bed? Was there a set bedtime?
We didn't have a set bedtime, but all of us, I feel like we're pretty, we're pretty responsible with it. I would oftentimes go to bed by 10 o'clock, 10:30 type of thing, unless I was doing homework or anything like that, then it might be later, but... Yeah, most nights probably 10 or 10:30.
Yeah, and I just want to mention too that it wasn't like you were, you guys didn't have access to internet or any of those amenities. Like, those were still present.
Oh yeah, like, we were off the grid. Like, we didn't have power from Kingston or from any other municipalities. Like, we had windmills and solar panels. to create our power. So like that was pretty, sometimes, you know, you'd have to kind of gauge what you were doing based on that. Like if it was not a windy day, you know, if there wasn't a lot of wind or a lot of sun that day, you'd be like, okay, I guess, you know, you won't be watching Netflix tonight because you don't want the power to go out because you were watching TV for too long, type of thing.
How did you guys create this? Because you're pretty young, right, at this point, too. It's not like you are mature adults at that point. You're fairly young. How did your parents and how did you guys have these conversations where you were like, okay, we got to be mindful about this at this particular point? How did you get educated on that?
Well, my dad kind of took us through, like, you know, and showed us, like, the power systems, kind of how to gauge where everything is at, how to see how full the batteries were at the time to see if we could do things. So it's like, if the conversation basically was, if you do this, we'll be out of power. You know, do you want to be able to cook dinner tonight? Do you want to be able to do this? Okay, then don't do this and drain all the power, type of thing.
Well, amazing, because it's such a collective way of thinking, right?
Yeah.
Like you're putting your individual needs kind of aside and you're thinking collectively, which is incredible way of thinking. I remember growing up when I was, I grew up in India for the first 14 years of my life, and there used to be massive power cuts and power shortage. And I remember, and it's so instilled in me to this day, about making sure that if you're not using anything, if you're not using light in a particular room, that all of those things are turned off. And it's very interesting to me because of the winters, that at times during wintertime, I need certain lights on just for my mood. Mm-hmm. Because the winters are so dark and gray. And still in the back of my head, I'm like, okay, do you really need to have those little tiny fairy lights on? And and I have to think about that. But most of the times I do have to have them on just because of to elevate my mood.
Absolutely, yeah.
But that's so incredibly interesting that you guys learned about And you were taught and learned about conservation and learned about collective way of thinking rather than, as I said, individualistic way of thinking. And how did that shape you, Braden? If you're looking at it in a retrospective, you're looking at it retrospectively, how did that shape you as a person?
Well, I think, you know, like, I remember being like, oh, man, like, I want to practice guitar, but you know, somebody else is doing this, or somebody's been doing this all day, or somebody's been doing laundry, right? So you're like, oh, I don't know if I should do that. I'll go check the power system, type of thing. So, you know, that kind of taking into account, you know, everybody else's, what they're doing throughout the day, and then taking account into what you want to do and being like, is it really something I need to do right now? I think that's, you know, I think it was really big for shaping kind of how I think right now. Like, even now, like you said, you know, like, do I really need to have these lights on? Mm-hmm. It's the exact same thing. Like, I'll be walking around the house and I'll see lights on and just turn them off. Or if the fridge is open for a bit too long, you're like, what are you doing? Like, close the fridge.
Don't be staring into nothingness.
Yeah. Trying to cool down the house. Yeah. It's like, even things, you know, like, it really helped me with my cause and effect. You know, so like being like, okay, if I do this, it's a direct correlation to how this will play out. If I do this, you know, like this will happen, type of thing. So it's really helped me with my ability to kind of see past, you know, exactly what's happening at this point in time. It's like, I can see what's, you know, if I do this thing, this will happen later, type of thing.
It's
helped a lot with that.
It's a you're being reflective at the same time, because like your whole like thinking and how you think about things, that thought processes developed accordingly, where you had to constantly reflect about whether this is necessary or not necessary, and what is important and what's not important, what's relevant and what's not relevant.
Yeah.
And in terms of your music. How did you come to your music?
I can't remember how I first, like, I think the first time I played guitar was, like, I was super, super young. There's a picture of me with an acoustic guitar when I'm, like, 2 or 3 years old holding it. But, I don't think that's, like, I didn't play then, obviously, but mm-hmm. It's like that wasn't even the start of me picking it up. But I think there was always something about instruments, even just seeing them, where I was like, ooh, that looks cool, from the get-go. So my parents at one stage ended up getting me a guitar because, they kind of saw my affinity towards, towards that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of just picked it up on my own for the first little bit. So my dad loaded a bunch of songs onto an MP3 player I had. And then I would just listen to them, go through them, and try and figure out, where the sounds were on the guitar. And then, would start kind of piecing together songs from there. And then after a while, I was starting to actually, be able to play through these songs. And then I started, showing my parents and stuff like that. And they were like, oh, we should probably get you some lessons so you actually know what you're doing. And then from there, I kind of just, took off with it.
And did you actually get some lessons? Like, did you have a guitar teacher?
Yeah, so I did have a guitar teacher for a while. She actually came to, like, Storrington and would teach lessons kind of on the lunch break. So, there were three of us at the school that, kind of took guitar lessons there, and on the lunch break she would come in, be like, okay, Braden, your turn. I go in, do like a 20-30 minute lesson type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember at the time being like, oh, I already know how to learn these things. Like, I don't know, like, why am I here learning this? So I kind of faked my way through lessons, because she was trying to teach me notation and theory and stuff like that, and I would kind of just learn what the sounds were in the song and then play along by doing that and be like, yeah, I'm reading the notes. I know what this means, but I had no clue what I was talking about.
And retrospectively?
Terrible idea. Terrible idea.
You wish you had learned the notes.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm spending a lot of time actually right now with this, the isolation and such, kind of actually like looking up lessons online, how to do all of these things. Because I do have an understanding of it.
Yeah.
I kind of, I know the guitar, I know, where the notes are and stuff like that. I know the chords and everything, but I just want a broader understanding of how everything works. Just because creatively, there are certain chords, there are certain progressions that invoke certain moods,
mm-hmm.
or feelings you will get.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be much easier if you say, hey, I want to hear a song that's really uplifting. It'll be a lot easier for me to be like, okay, well, chord progressions that are like this are uplifting. So if I work with something like this or work with these chords, it'll invoke that feeling. So I'm working really, really hard right now to try and grasp that understanding. But if I had just done that from the beginning, instead of faking my way through it, then I would have been much, further off than I am right now.
So what is the lesson for the kids right now that are sitting at home and are in isolation? I know the online school just started
mm-hmm.
this last week. We're just also trying to figure out, I have a 16-year-old at home, and we're just trying to navigate that and figure out. Self-regulation is such a difficult process at any age, but
yeah.
particularly at that age where that part of the brain is still developing, is a very difficult thing. What are your thoughts on that? What would you like to share with our youth right now, from your incredible experiences that you've had?
I think a couple really big things would be, like having a routine. So waking up at the same time every day, doing something in the morning that feels productive, or even writing out your goals for the day, a couple small goals, just so you earn that sense of accomplishment throughout the day. It's a really good way to keep your mental health up. It keeps you feeling like you're progressing, even if it's small things. you know, like rearrange the fridge or something like that. You know what I mean? Or, mm-hmm. You know, write in your journal or something like that. It's small goals, really small things, but at the same time, that sense of accomplishment will be way bigger than you think it will be.
Yeah. Don't think about climbing a mountain if you haven't climbed stairs yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Like one stair at a time. And, that doesn't, like, because I think we sometimes put a lot of pressure on ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of, you know, where we need to be, and our expectations sometimes are so high that when we don't meet them, it is such a disappointment. And then it's not encouraging the next time to start. So I think keep your goals really, really small. And as you said, and this is really important, to make sure that we're kind of going to bed at the same time and waking up around the same time, and pick up a skill, anything, mm-hmm. give it a try and see, you know, anything that is a passion or an interest, start exploring it. And tell me a little bit about your routine right now. What is your day looking like?
So right now, you know, I try and wake up. It's at around 9 o'clock, mm-hmm. Really late for me, but I've kind of taken this time to be like, okay, I'm gonna get the sleep that I need.
Yeah.
It's really important right now.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I wake up around 9, and then I make a coffee, and I usually go and sit outside. We've got like chickens and stuff here. So I go out, sit
nice.
Outside and just kind of sit in the yard. Yeah. No, it's really nice. Yeah. Collect the eggs. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But yeah, so what I do is I'll wake up, yeah, make a coffee, go outside. And then after that, I'll try and sit down and play guitar for an hour, hour and a half. But like I say play guitar, but it's actually like I'll sit down and I'll be like, okay, this is dedicated practice time. So mm-hmm. learn something new. So I get that kind of out of the way for my, you know, for the day, like being like, okay, here's a sense of accomplishment. I learned something new. And then I'll usually work out, and then the rest of the day I kind of keep, you know, some free space as well. I like to read quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And also like hang out with my family and stuff, because I've been living, downtown with friends for quite a while. So it's really nice to get some family time as well. And that's pretty much like the structure of my day. I don't keep it too strict. Like I don't have like from 9 to 9:30 mm-hmm. coffee, from this to this.
For some people that might be helpful, because some people do like a lot of structure. Mine is very fluid as well. Like the way because I have to completely restructure my day, but I also have a 16-year-old and I also have mm-hmm. a husband. So it's very interesting because I have to kind of, create all of our schedules around one another as well, but at the same time also making sure that I have some time that's dedicated to self-care, whether it's exercising, which is really, really important, or giving myself time to be able to process what is mm-hmm. happening around and trying to find a positive element, like always trying to figure out where the positive is within these very interesting and challenging times. So what time, and then how are you in terms of like your music? You started a relief for local musicians.
Yeah, so it's like the Kingston Artist Relief is what I've called it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically, I started it for artists that, you know, won't be able to apply for EI. Like they won't be eligible for that because, you know, a lot of these artists are freelance workers, gig workers, you know, they're playing shows, they're teaching lessons type of thing. So it's all based on contractual work.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, they've got a complete loss of income and no way of kind of getting any funding through the government. So I tried to start this fund where, you know, I could help fund these musicians, you know, just a little bit, just to like, you know, pay for some groceries or help with the rent or something like that. And I teamed up with the Kingston Musicians Union to do so. So they've got like, you know, it's basically I'll be giving the funds to them and they'll be dispersing the funds to musicians in need.
And how's that going right now?
It's kind of slowed down a little bit, I think, because of the emergency benefit that's been unrolled.
Yeah.
I think people are thinking that, you know, musicians will be covered under that.
Are they?
It's hard to say right now. I think, you know, like, I think that's mainly focused on people that are working full-time jobs, but maybe don't have the required hours for EI.
Yeah.
Type of thing, but yeah. I don't think it is for freelance workers
or gig economy.
Yeah. So you know,
yeah, that makes it very difficult because a lot of the population is part of that gig economy. And yeah, I'm hoping the government is going to roll something out for everyone, because
absolutely,
you know, we should all be protected and we should all be taken care of.
Nobody should really be left behind in a sense, you know.
No.
It is a tough time for everybody, so it's like, you know, it should be a time where it's everybody's kind of together on this and lifting each other up. And that's the main reason I started it, because there wasn't, you know, there isn't a fund, or there wasn't at the time, at least. I'm not sure if there is another fund happening with it right now, but there wasn't a fund at the time when I started it for these people. So, and me, myself, being part of the musician community, I felt like almost an obligation to, you know, help my peers. So
yeah, absolutely. And what a wonderful thing to be doing as well for our community, because Kingston is such an amazing place.
It is such an
incredible town. I feel so privileged that I am part of this community, because it's, you know, very, there's so much art, there's so many artists, there's so many musicians. It's a wonderful place for that. And I think it's really important at this particular point that we support our artists, and we support our musicians who give so much to us. And it's time that we also give something back to them in their hour of need. I think you're doing an amazing work, and anyone who's listening to this and would like to support, that would be wonderful. Can you just let them know where to find you there, Braden?
Yeah, so the fund I've started is just on GoFundMe, and it's just called the Kingston Artist Relief.
Okay.
And that's all there is to it.
Wonderful. And are you doing some live concerts right now?
So I did the other day. I did one through Visit Kingston with their Together at Home campaign, which was a lot of fun. So I think in the future here, I'm going to probably do another one on our, like, Dakota's Instagram page. And I think we're also going to be working on some other things as well right now, just some, like, covers and stuff like that to put out. Kind of like virtually, we all have recording softwares and stuff like that. We all have a camera that we can use to take a video type of thing. So I think we're going to be working on some content to put out still.
How does that feel? Because in terms of like music, you kind of need an audience.
Yeah.
And
it was pretty strange, actually. That live stream I did the other day was the first one I've ever done.
Yeah.
And it's pretty strange, you know, like you finish a song and usually like we'll be cheering and stuff like that. But that's not happening, obviously, because it's all over video. So all you see is like people typing, like, "Hey, great job!" Yeah, woohoo, loved that song or stuff like that. But yeah, so it's very interesting. It's very, very different feeling.
And do you get distracted if like you are in the middle of like playing something and somebody's like typing and sending?
Yeah. A couple times I'd look up at it and see what people are typing, and it'd be funny stuff because, you know, like my friends are watching and stuff like that, so they're typing funny stuff to me, and I'm looking at it, and then I'm mid song, and then I'm not thinking about the song, and I'm like, oh wait, there are still lyrics I have to do here. Like I need to go into this part. Like it was pretty funny. It's a weird feeling.
And it's another skill that you have to develop now.
Exactly.
To look at it and to remain focused.
Yes, keep my composure.
Keep your composure. Well, it's been wonderful talking to you, Braden. I really, really enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, me too.
And you're doing wonderful stuff. And I'm looking forward to hearing your next composition next music. Yeah, coming out. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on the Sleep in Society podcast. And I will connect with you next week. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, available on ruhisleep.ca. Don't forget to follow us on social media @ruhisleep on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you for listening.